Come with us on a journey into the unknown, the unexplained, and the unbelievable. We will test your senses and challenge your beliefs. A world where science and religion clash. Or do they? You will meet real people and hear real stories, but you will not believe. You will witness strange sights and hear strange sounds, but you will not believe. This is the New England Ghost Project. Welcome to the nightmare.
Pip, pip, cheerio. Welcome all to Ghost Chronicles International. I am Ron Kolick, your host. La 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 la. And with me, all the way across the pond, is the, the guy.
The other one.
Steve Parsons.
The British one who never says cheerio at the start because it's a farewell greeting.
I know. I figured I'd better end the show right now.
And anyway, it's not cheerio. Not properly. It's cheer-ho.
Cheer-ho?
Cheer-ho.
Cheer-ho.
And you'll have to do it in the proper British accent.
I did. Cheer-ho.
But you didn't. Anyway, do you realise I'm missing Wicked Tuna for this?
Yeah, well, you're not missing much.
They're going to catch a fish.
There you go. I'm sure they will. Anyways, welcome
Blaster.
To Ghost... Yeah. Welcome to Ghost Chronicles International, right here on Toginet, Pararex, Planet Paranormal, Astronet Radio.
And anyone that'll have us.
And we still on Crackle Radio, by the way.
I think so.
Okay, yeah. Fine. All right. So, anyway, who's a hoe? I know. I want to offer a belated birthday wish to Nathan.
Forgot, didn't you? You're going.
No,
you
it's not that I forgot. Unfortunately, some of us, unlike you, are busy. You know, we have important things to do in life.
Got that right. Some of us, like me, are busy.
Unlike you, just like me. Yeah, it's just like you, right? Playing with your Legos. Yeah, I understand.
I'm sorry, I don't swanning around at some retreat week after week with the flu.
Oh yeah, someone's got to
stuff in your face.
Hard work, hard work.
Stuffing your face.
It's all good. All good. Yeah. Don't forget dressing up.
That's your favorite occupation.
Okay. There you go.
Creature of the dressing up box. Whereas, on the other hand, some of us have been very busy this week preparing for the coming weekend when I'm off up to Liverpool to host a ghost club event tour around Liverpool, haunted Liverpool, with my
co-host. Oh, really? Are you going to see any Beatles up there, or is it...
They might pop in. Particularly as I went to school with Paul McCartney's cousin. There you go.
Oh, wow. Yeah, there you go. And like...
Probably did.
So you have your ghost box going, and perhaps you might the ghost meet a pro so that you can contact John Lennon?
Might do. In fact, well, his house in Menlo Avenue is said to be haunted by his spirit.
Really?
Liverpool. So really? We are going to be taking them on a tour of Liverpool and the surrounding areas, talking about some of the more notable ghost cases, and in particular the time slips, because they have an interest in the time slips. And there's a particular area of Liverpool around Bold Street in Liverpool which has a notorious history for being associated with time slip phenomena. And I think time slip phenomena, we've had Anne on the show to talk about this. I think currently,
yeah, don't bring that story up again. We've heard that 12 times. Did you have something new?
All right, then.
Yeah.
Do we have something new? In the world of the paranormal, there is always something new.
No, I mean time slips. No.
We're still following up that very, very recent report, but we've discovered a few others quite recently. There was these both date to the 1990s, but they've only recently sort of surfaced. One of which isn't that unusual. Man and wife go shopping in the city centre. He goes one way, she goes another. He all of a sudden confronts a scene straight out of the 1940s. He's very disturbed by this scene. But then, fortunately, he walks into a store and it recovers back to the 1990s.
You know, I actually saw an Arthur C. Clarke episode where they went to this hotel and they went inside and it was all old time and everything else. It seemed like we'd be back in time. And they stayed there overnight, and then they left in the morning, and then they went back to tell everybody to show them the hotel and how quaint it was and all that, and they found the place, but it didn't look the same. And when they went in, it was totally different.
There are, the time slip phenomena has been reported. I mean, we go back to, I mean, probably the most famous, of course, is the Versailles case.
Versailles, yeah.
With the two ladies, the two
which
English,
is in my book, Ghost of the Day, by the way.
Which is in your book, The Ghost of the Day. Which isn't in, what isn't in your book is a perfectly reasonable explanation for
Versailles. No, no, no. What have you been talking to?
Which predates your book, which suggests that you didn't know about it.
No, I just don't put crap in my book, that's all.
Oh, I see. Oh, well, okay. Well, we won't discuss that then.
You know, people come up with explanations, you know, like your friend there who, you know, what's his name on TV there in the UK? Richard Wiseman. Yeah, it's Richard Wiseman. Yeah, he explains everything away. So does Joe Nichols. They're all the same.
Yeah.
Except their explanation is more ridiculous than believing in the paranormal, but that's whatever.
Not in every instance, is not.
No, not in every instance. I will give you that, but a lot of times, even the great Karen O'Keefe admitted that his explanations on Most Haunted were at times more unbelievable than believing in.
Oh, you're referring to the supersonic fly.
Among other things, yes.
I think that was his most legendary, the supersonic fly episode, where he described the Carl had had a mark on his forehead, and Kieran's explanation was that Carl may have been impacted by a small, fast-flying insect. Mm-hmm. And somebody, there was some psychical researcher did sat down with.
I'm sure.
Yeah, and discovered that the. I had nothing better to do that week. And discovered that the fly was going at least three times the speed of sound.
That works good, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, but in actual fact, way back, we're just coming back to Versailles, seeing as we just...
Oh, we're going to go there, aren't we, huh?
Well, we are, because we've got to slip back to 1938.
All right, let's go to time.
When the mystery of...
Let's go back 5 minutes ago, where we were just talking about that.
When The Mystery of Versailles, A Complete Solution, was published by J.R. Sturge Whiting.
Yes, I know.
And he actually took the time, which not very many investigators ever did, to actually go to Versailles and walk through the grounds and try to come up with an explanation as to what may have taken place. And he does. And what he basically says, and I won't bother summarizing the book, but what he basically says is the ladies... took a different route. No, they just took a slightly different route than they thought they were on. So what they were seeing wasn't necessarily what they believed they were seeing.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
In fact, the solving of the Versailles puzzle is long overdue, and psychical researchers are indebted to Mr. Serge Whiting for devoting so much time and trouble.
Break.
And that introduction was written by a gentleman by the name of Harry Price.
I know, but give me a break.
Okay. But this is...
Seriously. I mean, you don't think there's anybody else that's going down there proving it the other way?
There have been...
Of course there has.
Of course there has, but none of them have ever convincingly demonstrated that...
And neither has that one. It doesn't convince me, because the key word, you started right off the bat saying, it may have... And the,
well,
there you go.
Of course, it may have. Well, because
may
we can't
have.
Get better than may have. Because
it might have, could have, would have,
because should've. There were only two people there when it happened.
Yeah.
And because of there were only two people there when it happened, nobody apart from those two people will ever know what they experienced.
Yeah.
But the fact that they experienced it doesn't mean that they know what happened. But you and I, and this is, you know, it applies to just about every case.
You know, there's a good saying. There's nothing worse than a sharp image of a fuzzy concept. And, of course, that was by Ansel Adams. And we know a wise word is none wiser than that.
Well, okay.
Which is everything we witness, really, isn't it?
So we can. If you're listening to the podcast, you might as well turn off now, because this show's not going to get any better.
Oh, really? I thought I was imparting all kinds of wisdom here, but maybe I wasn't.
But no, no. But it does raise an interesting point about.
Yes.
You said about Joe Nickell. You raised him before, and
Joe Nickell has commented on everything and everything I've done since I started doing this, and he doesn't know. You know, he's a freaking English teacher. Give me a break.
Well, he's like the Warrens, isn't he? You know, they've investigated every case. I'm surprised that they didn't do Borley.
We should have Joe Nichols on.
Do you know what? I reckon I know what the next movie is going to be. The Conjuring 3 is going to be the Warrens solve Borley Rectory.
Because it's
the only famous case that they haven't yet stamped and weed all over.
What about the Golden Fleece?
Give them a time. That would be Conjuring 4. Jason and the Argonauts in the Golden Fleece probably.
No, that famous pub there in the UK. 16th century pub in Inn. What? In York, England?
Every village has got a 16th century pub.
Yeah, it's, you know, in York.
I know the one you mean. I've stayed there.
Notice the shambles of the Golden Fleece.
I've stayed there. It's not that popular or famous. We've got better ones than that over there.
It's haunted by Lady Peckett.
It's only, you see, this is the trouble with Americans. They have this very narrow view of the British Isles. I was looking at, on social media, there is a series of famous British hauntings written by an American who hasn't been to Great Britain. And it's very, very...
We have the internet.
His information is actually quite accurate, but his choice of cases is clearly not one that a Brit would choose because they.
So you read my book again, I guess.
I would also wager that it would work the other way around because we, you know, we over here would choose those classic American cases, Amityville and the Queen Mary and the Eastern Penn State.
Yeah,
you know,
so,
that one. Or Alcatraz. You know, we have the Winchester House. We have these very sort of narrow visions of each other's notable hauntings. 50 Berkeley Square always comes up, as does Borley, as does the Golden Fleece, the Ancient Ram, Woodchester. And yet they don't rate that highly over here. And I'm guessing that the Winchester House... and Lizzie Borden House don't actually probably rate that highly over there either.
Hmm. What about the Roman soldiers at the Golden Fleece?
No, they're at the Treasurer's House.
Not according to this book.
And they are according to the reality. The Roman Legion was seen inside the cellars of the Treasurer's House in York by a man who was fixing the plumbing, and he was up a ladder at the time.
Yeah, I know.
And your friend,
Richard
yeah, your friend boasts about it endlessly that he met Harry, the man. Harry the plumber. And it's Richard's sort of after dinner best line that right. He met Harry the plumber.
Except 99.9% can be explained now.
That's the other one. Yeah, that's Richard's other one. And 2 kilowatts. People generate 2 kilowatts of electricity. I can't imagine where he got
stone
that
from. Tape there.
And yes, that's another famous one of Richard's as well. Because all original thinking by Richard.
I'm a great student of Richard.
Well, I understand that
I read all his books.
What, all of them?
All of them. Especially What is Ghost? It's one of my favorites.
The forward in that, I think, is the my favorite part. What is a ghost? Here lies a God-fearing man destined for hellfire and damnation by Richard Felix. Actually, yeah. Let's see. Who wrote the introductions then? There's a nice picture of Derek Acora. That reminds me of a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
What the experts think. Let's see. Dr. Matthew Smith, Derek Acora.
Wait a minute. What was that you just said? I'm sorry. I didn't hear that.
What the experts think.
What the experts think?
Think. Okay. Think.
Okay, think.
So we have Dr. Matthew Smith.
Oh, there you go.
Derek Acora.
There you go.
Stacey Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, never heard of her. Chris Fleming.
You know Chris.
Yeah.
He was the one that did that show with the British Pornstar.
Yeah. Patrick Burns.
Yeah.
Jackie Newcomb.
Married to Molly Gibson.
Fellow called Steve Parsons.
Who?
Steve Parsons.
What an expert. Oh, wow, that's pretty good.
Jason Harris.
Oh, God. Okay. Yeah.
Darren Stanton.
Who's Stanton?
Jeff Belanger. He hasn't phoned for a while.
Yeah.
And right at the back, he's got Ron Kolek.
Mm.
Sir Humphrey Wakefield. And here we go. And Ed Felix.
There you go. So what the experts.
Cast. What a cast.
Yep.
So let's see what Ron Kolek said about...
No, let's not. Let's move right along.
No. Maureen Wood, my partner, and 50...
Oh, wait a minute. We're going to have to say what Steve Parsons says, too, that
if you've got a copy of the book to read, feel free.
I don't have it in front of me.
Maybe it's a negative connotation associated with it through its use in books, stories, and movies. But as for me, being politically correct is not so important. I prefer ghost. I define the word as any spectral entity, either living or dead. You may laugh at the thought of a living spectral entity, but actually it is quite obvious. Living is loosely defined as having a life or existence. It is widely accepted within the paranormal community that there are generally two types of haunting.
Really?
And intelligent. Residual haunting or ghost is nothing more than an imprint in the time and fabric of our universe without the ability to interact.
This is written
red. Whereas an intelligent haunting or ghost possesses not only the ability to interact with its environment, but also, under certain circumstances, even to understand it. They possess both intelligence and personality and are hence living.
So like the British.
So what separates the ghost from other spectral entities?
Yeah, what does?
It is simple. The ghost once had a body. To me, these traits that characterize the word ghost.
Ah, look at that. Isn't that sweet?
There you go.
Should we see
what the other expert said?
That was so embarrassing.
Okay.
What did Steve Fossett say? Seriously.
What is a ghost is the eternal question that all of us engaged in psychical research have been striving to be able to answer.
Oh, there is still that psychical research stuff.
It could be argued that science really only took a serious interest in trying to understand the question in 1882, following the formation of the Society for Psychical Research.
All right, there he goes.
Before that time, the question either wasn't asked as society simply accepted ghosts and spirits as part of their unseen world, or was occasionally tackled by philosophers and men of religion. There are many who already claim to know what ghosts are. Ron Kolek. Spiritualists who inform us that they are the trapped souls of the deceased, unable or unwilling to move on to higher planes of existence.
See, I didn't go down that route.
Parapsychologists offer the explanation that ghosts represent nothing more than hallucinations or some other cruel, unkind trick of the mind. There are countless paranormal investigation teams throughout the USA and Britain, many with their own theories and notions about the nature of ghosts and how they manifest. The modern hunt for an answer, many different methods are employed. Good old-fashioned seances still prevail. Ouija boards and dousing rods remain popular tools of the ghost
hunt. Rock on!
Modern technology has allowed us to peer into the darkest cellar and the spookiest hiding place of ghosts using infrared and thermal imaging.
Ooh.
The electromagnetic spectrum.
And on people's skirts, evidently.
The electromagnetic spectrum is scanned for the energy used or manipulated by ghosts by a variety of EMF meters, and the voices of the dead are listened for using modified radios and computer software, but all, sadly, to no avail. For despite the claims by many, we still lack the most crucial item of equipment for the ghost hunter, the ghost detector. But then it is hardly surprising when one considers if we cannot detect or measure something that we know nothing about at all.
That's not true, because I gave you a ghost meter.
It is a truth. Yeah. Final sentence. It is a truth, perhaps not universally acclaimed, that at the end of the first decade of the 21st century, we still do not have an answer to the question, what is a ghost?
That was so deep.
Well, no, what's interesting reading that is the introduction.
Yeah, you wrote it. That's what's interesting to you.
No, the introduction there is actually an early version of the introduction in Ghostology.
Really? So you stole...
I stole
Richard Felix's work, huh? Because he published it before you.
I plagiarized my own book.
Oh, that's so sad.
Is that possible? Can you plagiarize your own
book? I don't know. I'm confused. I don't know. Unless it was a time slip.
When did Richard's book come out?
Oh, I don't know. When he came over here...
18...
I still got a couple of copies around.
I'll tell you what. It's on very cheap paper. 2001... It is. Listen, it's 2009.
He came over in 2009. Oh wow, time flies.
That's when the book's published.
Yeah, he brought it over. It was first right off the presses when he came.
2009.
Oh yeah. Wow.
But what's interesting though is, apart from the fact that it's on very very cheap paper, that is really cheap paper.
I'll stop complaining. Your fellow researcher and paranormal investigator and your edition of paper and so on, shame on you.
That's it's interesting to see that. I mean, what was that, 7 years ago?
More than that. You said 2009, right?
Well, if it was published 2009, well, I wrote
right, 7 years ago. Yep.
Yeah, I wrote that just before publication because it was a very last minute thing. Isn't it always with Richard? I need it. When do you need it for, Richard?
Now.
Yesterday.
There you go.
Okay. So it's interesting to read back words that you put down so many years ago and how your mindset changes, how your
opinion
changes things. So.
Now, when you came over here, I think was it the first year? No, the first year at the beach house, right? Yeah.
First year at the beach house with the newspaper article.
Yeah, they won a Women's World magazine. I actually made Women's World magazine, which was simply amazing because it's... I have no clue why. The reason they told me, because I was a reluctant ghost hunter. But anyways, as you can see, that article was different.
Well, we do change our stance. And I think one of the things that it's important, and if you look at the Parascience website, one of the things we've never done is rewrite old investigation reports or theories or ideas, because... we believe it's wrong to do that, to rewrite or to erase from the history. There are a lot of groups who purport to be scientific or purport to be. And when they start out, of course, we all make mistakes. We all make errors. We all learn and develop our abilities.
We just see things differently.
Well, we do. And you start off much more credulous and then become a problem. And I think this is universal. Certainly groups over here I've spoken to, they start off very credulous and become more sceptical rather than the other way around. They realise that the phenomena that they're experiencing, perhaps for the first time, seem intriguing. And then third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh time are less so, and they become more critical, more sceptical, and they learn more about about the world around them and about the things that the nature of anomalous phenomena. So they do become more critical. We all do. It's, you know, we become more familiar with it. We understand it better. But what you do find is a lot of groups remove their past history, so they to save them the embarrassment factor, I guess. But Parascience has always left its history on its website. Because,
as have I.
As have you.
For better or worse.
Because
probably worse.
Well, it is embarrassing sometimes, but nonetheless, you know, if you think back to school science, you had to show your workings out. And we believe that leaving the historical traces of our investigations online mean that we can show how we reached the point we're at today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rather than, oh no, we've always been brilliant.
Yeah, it's true.
You've been around longer. But in many ways, we've been very fortunate with our generation because we started to investigate the paranormal way back before social media, before the internet really took off. And so we were able, there was no pressure on Parascience or our generation of investigators.
Right.
To stick their results online on a Sunday morning you know, to join the happy throng of people who do. We could take as much time as we wanted to work through an investigation and consider what we were, you know. And the only person that ever read the investigation reports, apart from ourselves, was the person who owned the place we were investigating.
Yeah, so, you know what the interesting thing is
so all our
you
bodies,
know, yeah,
they're buried.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're buried. I think they're still
well, they're
there,
buried but, because they never existed in terms yeah. of.
But I mean, when I first started doing this, like I said, the internet was so new and the two main websites I distinctly remember going to was Ghost Village, Jeff Belanger's site, and Fiona Broom's site, Hollow Hill. They're the only ones that's devoted a hell of a lot of time to the discussion of ghosts and stuff. So that's, you know, that's where I got a lot of information at that time, or at least had my whistle wet. But you know what's funny now is we have this internet and we have all these TV shows and, you know, in the future somewhere, you know, 1,000 years from now, will it be like, you know, the crew of the Intrepid there, whatever it was that used to was a TV show and some space thing thought it was the, you know, the historic records? I mean, will they believe
it? It might
will they
be.
Believe?
We don't know. I mean, that's the intriguing thing, isn't it? We don't know what sort of legacy. We don't know what we're going to discover. You know,
that's the problem.
I was watching a program earlier today. I was doing some background stuff ready for the weekend that's coming up. So, but I was strained onto YouTube briefly, and I caught up with a program that was showing you how they built computers 30 years ago, state of the art. Mm-hmm. 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look back and you think, God, that's old-fashioned.
I know. We got to go, actually, because we got to get coming up to the break. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. That's why, you know, the people that believe we didn't go to the moon, because they don't believe that we had the computer power. Yeah, well, not even that, but we didn't have the computer power. But that's what we had all those people there sitting there with their freaking slide rules trying to figure things out. But anyways, we're coming up to break, so we're going to have to take a break. And when we come back, we'll listen to something else, I'm sure. Anyways, you're listening to Ghost Chronicles International with Steve Foss and Ron Kolick right here on TojiNet, Pararex, Planet Paranormal, Astronet Radio, and whoever the hell else we'll play. We'll be right back after the following messages.
Monday mornings just got scarier. Tune in every Monday at 11 a.m. for another episode of Ghost Chronicles Morning Edition with New England's own Van Helsing, Ron Kolick, and his inquisitive travel companion, Lou Blassie, the professor. Hey, that's me. Each week we'll delve into the realm of the supernatural where all that is not what it appears to be. With remarkable guests, spirited conversation, and the occasional voice of the deceased, we'll bring you a whole new meaning to the term dead air. Ghost Chronicles, Mondays at 11 on Eagle Radio 1110.
Welcome to TogiNet, radio with a cutting edge.
Feel the need to do some soul searching or make some changes in your life to create a more positive future? Then Circles of Wisdom is just the place for you. Circles of Wisdom is a metaphysical bookstore and more, located on Route 28 in downtown Andover, Massachusetts. We carry a large selection of books and music, crystals and gemstones, jewelry and gifts, sage, aromatherapy, and so much more, all in a relaxing and welcoming atmosphere. We offer classes on a variety of topics like yoga, Reiki, psychic development, alternative healing, and personal transformation. For guidance on this journey we call life, get a reading from one of our many readers at Circles of Wisdom, 90 Main Street in downtown Andover, right next to Bertucci's. Call us at 978-474-8010 or check us out on the web at www.circlesofwisdom.com. Lots to see and do in a feel-good place, an oasis in this hectic world.
They're creepy and they're kooky, mysterious and spooky. They all talk gobbledygooky, the Pararex family. The shows are paranormal, not stuffy but informal. The topics are abnormal, the Pararex family.
They're strange, deranged, unreasonable. stream.
So grab your favorite brew. It's time to rendezvous as we give awards to the Parax family.
Chronicles International. Listen to us live on Parax, the Ghost Channel, the Ghost Box, iTunes, TalkieNet Chat, TalkieNet,
Astronet Radio.
Yeah, so all of them, we're there anyway. If you're listening to us, tough. Suck it up. Anyway, I just want to run through the chat room before we go to the word of the week. Because Nathan was said earlier in a discussion in response to our discussion on time that this is an illusion concept anyways, but that was written some time ago, so we're taking
it didn't really exist.
It didn't exist, so he correctly pointed out it's Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia, and that he made an interesting suggestion that one of us should sit down and write a sequel to What is a Ghost called What is Not a Ghost. I can tell you what is not a ghost yet, Richard Felix, although apparently Prince might be.
Don't know.
No, Prince somebody or other.
No.
And the final comment was, we were all born imperfectly brilliant.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway,
Anyway, we have a word of the week, though.
Wait a minute.
Like Sesame Street.
Excuse me.
Here we go. I introduced the second part, and you interrupt. Go on.
Yeah, right. Knock it off. And today's show is brought to you by the word. What are you laughing at? Poltergeist.
You're supposed to do it with the Sesame Street voice, aren't you? One. Ooh.
That's a count.
Yeah. I don't say blah, blah, blah.
Oh, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, today's word is poltergeist. So what do we got on poltergeist?
All right. Should we... the word poltergeist comes from the German language words poltern, to mean sound, to rumble, and geist, ghost or spirit. Geist. The term translates itself as noisy ghost,
German.
Rumble ghost, or a loud spirit. Now, there have been several claimed explanations. Skeptic Joe Nickel says that poltergeist incidents typically originate...
Wait a minute, is he in the book?
No. He's on Wiki, so it must be true. Skeptic Joe Nickel says that claimed poltergeist originate from an individual who is motivated to cause mischief. And in a typical poltergeist outbreak, small objects are hurled through the air by unseen forces. Furniture is...
Most haunted, right?
Is overturned, or other disturbances occur. Usually just what could be accomplished by a juvenile trickster. Yeah, Nickel.
Yeah.
Nickel and diming the paranormal as usual.
Oh, I've been informed we now have listeners in the USA, UK, Canada, Costa Rica, and Germany. So good thing you get your German pronunciation right.
Yeah, should we... what's German for "we're very sorry"?
Schnell.
Anyway, poltergeists. Our word of the week has been brought to us over the last few weeks by the Encyclopedia of Psychic Science, written by Nandor Fodor and Sir Oliver Lodge, and was published in 1933. And they describe poltergeists somewhat differently as noisy spirits containing periodic psychic disturbances of a malicious character in certain places in the presence of certain, mostly unsuspecting, individuals. And then there are... they talk about many, many early cases. One of the earliest acknowledged cases was 1661, the famous drummer.
The drummer
of Tedworth, followed by the Reverend Samuel Wesley, the father of John Wesley, the preacher, which took place at Epworth in 1716.
Well, he sent that drummer to jail, right?
They did. It was the magistrate who sent the drummer to jail. The drummer of Tedworth was at the time associated with as a witchcraft case. rather than what we would recognize.
No, it's because we're more enlightened now.
Well, you sound like Damala. of course, my favorite Poltergeist case is the Cock Lane Ghost, or Scratching Fanny the Cock Lane Ghost, which is...
The Cock Lane Ghost.
Yeah. Which took place in the 1770s in London. Poltergeist actually an interesting choice of word of the week, and entirely coincidental. There was no forward planning in this choice of word of the week, given that our most recent guest,
last week,
Guy Lyon Playfair, we talked very briefly about perhaps the most famous Poltergeist case, or one of the most famous Poltergeist cases on record, that of the Enfield case, which took place in the 1970s in London. Certainly is one of the most well-documented, apart from perhaps the Rosenheim case in Germany, and of which Guy, of course, was one of the two lead investigators, along with Maurice Gross, both members of the Society for Psychical Research. And, of course, the Enfield case is the subject of the upcoming movie Conjuring 2, The Warrens Have Nothing to Do with It.
According to them.
According to the people who were actually there, as we heard...
If you want to take
the account of a person who was actually the lead investigator on the case, who said...
Somebody famous, who do you want? Jeez.
Who said, Ed turned up one day and said, I could help you make a lot of money from this, and then had nothing further to do with it. However... Poltergeists are, now, they have often been, I mean, Bill Roll, the parapsychologist, the American parapsychologist, William Roll, coined the term recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis, RSPK, and made this association with teenage angst, the prepubescent teen who was undergoing, who was... Puberty is stressful, and they have this uncontrolled sort of outbursting of psychokinetic energy that emanates from them, or people in other similar stressful situations. However, there has been a movement within psychical research over recent years to acknowledge the fact that poltergeists may be part of a continuum directly from hauntings, because there are so many characteristics that they share. For example, in hauntings, it is not uncommon to have objects moved or objects violently thrown about the place. Likewise, in poltergeist cases, it is not unknown for the appearance of apparitions, which had been a previous word of the week. So
if you don't know what it is, tune in to one of the past podcasts and you can find out.
That's right. But what you have here is more of an acknowledgement of instead of different classifications, a sliding scale, if you like, between extremes of the same phenomena. But poltergeists have also taken on in recent years a malevolent, demonic persona. We have here in the UK very, very recently the reemergence of the Black Monk of Pontefract location as now one of the most favoured, sought after, haunted locations that people like to visit. In the 1960s, there was a house in Pontefract, which is in in West Yorkshire, England, and it was a very famous poltergeist case. It was a very violent poltergeist case. It was along the lines of the Enfield case in terms of its publicity and exposure. The house, poltergeists generally last less than a year, and then they sort of fade away quietly.
It's interesting you say that, because I'm reading this encounter by this woman, Lisa Iorio, with her poltergeist. And she says, this is back in 1977, her scariest experience was she was carrying a tray of three glasses of milk upstairs at her cousin's. I can remember it vividly as if it was only yesterday. The glasses suddenly flew off the tray and up in the air all at once. It was almost as if they had levitated for a few seconds. Then the milk was poured over my head. The glasses then landed perfectly without spilling a drop, what was left, evidently. However, I was dripping wet at this point. How do you like that?
Well, I like that a lot because of the contradiction. The glasses levitated without spilling a drop, but she was soaking wet from something. What, did the ghost piss on her?
I didn't say that. Address all comments to Steve Parsons at parascience.org or UK or whatever the hell it is.
I mean, we go back to this continuum of ideas. I mean, Harry Price almost never referred to a ghost. He called himself a ghost hunter, but he referred to the ghosts as poltergeists. And he referred to the Bawley case as haunted by a poltergeist. The use of this sort of interchange, the oldest one we have goes back to the 12th century, where we have Gerald of Wales, who reports on a case with stone throwing and object movement, violent right. disposition of objects. We would call a poltergeist today. And, of course, in Disquentonium Magicarium, published in 1599, Martin Del Rio, the Jesuit priest, actually gives us 16 characteristics of hauntings and spectres. Well, the 16th one we probably would recognise as, I mean, if you, I don't know whether I should read the entire Latin translation, but he talks about them as demons, these spectres which in certain times and places or homes are wont to occasion various commotions and annoyances. And he's clearly describing what we would now call a poltergeist. But poltergeists, there was not this tradition of them being evil. They were mischievous. There are very few instances of people.
I wanted to ask you this before you get too far deep in it. And of course, you deal with a lot of parapsychologists. I thought it was the acceptance of most parapsychologists that poltergeists were really just the pent-up emotions of a teenager in a house, that it really wasn't a ghost or an apparition or anything like that. It was more just teller, you know, moving things around.
Psychokinesis. Well, I think that shows the complete ineptitude of parapsychology, because what they're trying to offer the public by way of an educated assessment of the situation is a load of nonsense, because what they're saying is it's not paranormal, it's the psychokinetic outburst of a rampant teenage mind. Now, if that isn't paranormal, you see, they're trying to explain one paranormal phenomena by invoking another paranormal phenomena.
It's
complete nonsense. And that shows the problem with parapsychology, because what it shows is, in actual fact, they're trying to make themselves appear to be cleverer than they are by going, oh, that's not paranormal, that's not haunting, that's just that teenager having a teen moment and ripping a 40-pound cast iron fireplace out of a wall, or throwing an object across the room by thought control. Mm-hmm. Yeah, parapsychologists, go back to drawing board.
And there are some cases
where... You really
can't
get away with that. We're back to the supersonic fly again, aren't we?
Yeah, in some cases they were even removed the children from the house and still the activity would occur.
Exactly. There are, with Enfield, for example, the children did throw some objects. And that's important to remember. And they were caught immediately that they did it. And they said, why did you do it? And he went, well, you know, you lot have been here for months and we're bored.
We thought we'd give you something.
We thought you'd give you something for your troubles. But they were caught immediately and owned up immediately. But they weren't present when many of the events took place. And can you really dismiss all of the witnesses to these cases? Like Nicol does, you know, Nicol sort of leaps onto this idea that, well, you know, the kids were caught, therefore everything's explained, therefore I can go back to doing what I was doing.
Well, we really shouldn't mention his name because we can get sued. We'll now refer to him as Five Cent.
Nah. I thought he was a, wasn't he a hipster?
Formerly known as Nickel, he is 5 cents.
No, come on, sue us, because then you've got to prove what you're saying isn't right.
Exactly. Anyways, you know, bring up a good point, Steve, in that, you know, you think about, is can intentions of hauntings cause haunting? For instance, yesterday on the morning show, we had this guy on, what the heck was it, Anthony Quinto or something like that, and he has Harold the doll, the haunted doll. What? And it was sold on eBay, and Harold, the doll, was a fake to start with. But yet, it seems to be generating all this terrible
money.
Things. That
money?
What's that?
Generating lots of money?
Whatever. But anyways, it's the thing is, Ken, and we know the case of the haunted house in Canada as well. Ken... intention actually creates paranormal activity. And we know that with our experiment we did at the paranormal. If we expect something, it will occur.
Well, we demonstrated that, I think, to your study group very well. For those that were, obviously the listeners weren't there, when we did...
Well, we don't want to go too much into it in case we
no, we won't go into, we won't go into detail.
Because we did
demonstrate the powerful effect of expectation and belief on people in a real environment. We manipulated people's expectations and beliefs, and
got the results we expected
entirely. But what you also have to deal with in many of these cases, if you go onto eBay and type in haunted doll, have you seen how many haunted dolls?
Absolutely.
You know, and each of them has a story attached to it, and the story is usually a very flimsy story that would not stand any form of credibility because it was scrutiny, I should say, because it was basically made up as they typed in the advert to sell the bloody thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the weekend we went to a yard sale, a car boot sale we have over here in the UK, and we saw a really...
I'm so jealous of you. I love
a really grotesque Victorian doll that was £5, and I very nearly bought it, and I was going to.
Ooh.
I was tempted on the basis of I want a haunted doll, and Kat, my wife, said, but this, of course, it's not haunted. I went, yeah, but it's as haunted as everybody else. And with a little bit of work, I could get £200 for that on eBay. You know, as you know, verified by famous psychical investigator Ron Kolak. Yeah. You know,
there you go. Use my name. Everybody else does.
Yeah. You know, just put it on. I'll just take a photograph of it. And Ghost Chronicles book.
Quite a, you can like.
But that's the problem.
Photoshop me in, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. This whole field is open to people who claim to be experts. And people call both of us experts. And I'm going to go back to ghostology here a little bit, if I may. Because one of the things that I always warn people is, just because somebody's on television, just because they tell you they're an expert, just because the media say they're an expert, that doesn't mean that they are an expert. Have experts. There's this old saying, isn't there? There are no experts in the paranormal.
That's what you'll hear. Yeah.
But of course, I mean, you hear that every time somebody disagrees with you. Well, there's no experts in the paranormal. But I claim expertise in some areas related to the paranormal, in areas where I have qualifications in measuring things. I don't claim to know what a ghost is, and woe betide anybody that says they do. We have mediums We have mediums who claim that, of course, they know what the afterlife is like. We have parapsychologists and skeptics like Nickel who tell you, well, of course,
it's
50 pence for the English listeners.
Oh, there you go.
Actually, no, it'd be 25 pence for the English listeners. But
yeah,
we have all of these experts who, they're self-proclaimed experts who come up with theories and ideas, often that are untestable, and then try and sell them to the public, and then try and sell books on the basis of their expertise.
But, I mean...
It's facile.
I know it's hard to discourage because, you know, you've told me this a million times that most major inventions were invented by amateurs. So, you know, you don't want to discourage it either. But
absolutely,
you know,
not. Might, you know,
yeah.
No, I mean, yeah. All, you look at archaeology and astronomy as just two examples of accepted science. The great discoveries have always been made by amateurs. Then they've gone off to, you know, then the professionals have come along at some point down the line to verify or validate. Well, verify or validate and stick the name all over it. But with parapsychology, but with ghost hunting, with spontaneous cases as they're referred to, what tends to happen is that the amateur hasn't upped the game. You know, they go out with these kooky bits of equipment, these ghost meter pros, these wacky Alice boxes and
stuff,
Fred's box and John's box and
Ron's box.
I mean, Steve Hoff, I mean, there is a man who has made a career out of blue LEDs in an echo chamber and some of the bizarrest sounding EVPs I've ever heard. And has his own paranormal channel and his own group of following, and every week comes up with another box. You know, I don't think Prince was barely cold when he was communicating with Steve Hoff and making, you know, saying he had spoken
to him. That's pretty good, huh?
It's very good going. But you have this, they're never going to get credit, scientific acceptance. They're never going to change our understanding. Academics are not going to come along to look at what they're saying and validate or verify or criticize what they're doing, because frankly they are being ridiculous. If the ghost hunting fraternity, if the members of the ghost groups, and there are very, very many good people investigating the paranormal and who could make fantastic discoveries, if only they would up their game a little bit and stop playing around with this nonsensical balloon equipment and just get out there and do the basic science right, we might actually shake the foundations of the establishment a little bit.
I agree, Steve. I totally agree with you. So we're not trying to discourage anybody from carrying on.
We're trying to encourage them.
Exactly. But document things. Try to explain.
Everybody listening to this show probably took science classes at high school, and they had I know it's similar in the US as the UK. They had a little book, and you had to write down the equipment, the theory, the methodology, the method that you used, and your conclusions in every science experiment that you did. And if you just use those very, very basic high school principles and apply it to what you're doing now, you will produce information that you can say, here is how we did it, lay it out, this is what we found, and this is how we reached the conclusions. Then people will take it seriously. Don't stick it on YouTube. Don't stick it on Facebook, because people will laugh at you. And don't draw a red circle around it.
Why not?
Because it's not paranormal if you have to put a red circle around it.
Oh, yeah. Well, how will you tell what it is?
If it needs a red circle around it, if you have to put a transcript on it, you're probably not going to be paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
Move on. Don't sit in huddles around.
Nothing to see here. Move along.
Yeah, nothing to see. Get off and do it properly, because one day, the possibility exists that an amateur investigator will turn up something that will, if they've done their job properly, like they all claim to do. Oh, we're scientists. We use science. Oh, pass me the Ouija board, Martha.
You know, the thing is that people just don't want to do the work. That's the problem. I know, even, you know, and I hate to say this, but even my own team, sometimes when I want them to get those damn reports in, I have to, you know, take them dragging and kicking. I mean, they want the experience. They want the going out and investigating.
McDonald's culture.
But don't want to do the work.
That's it. It's a McDonald's culture. We want it now. We want it large. We want it instantly. We don't prefer to work for it.
Exactly.
That's what it comes down to.
Which is sad. Because, like very I said, sad. there are some, you know, very smart people out there, some very good investigators, except when it comes to the final point. There's the bell, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, you and I have both met hundreds of paranormal, probably, you know, many, many paranormal groups. And in every group I have ever spent time with, there has always been individuals within that group who would make fantastic investigators, but they're drowned under the weight of ghost boxes, Ouija boards, spirit lamps, dowsing rods, crystals, and smudge sticks.
Yeah, anyways. So that's the bell, which means pizza from the dead seer, so we got to go. But anything coming up you want to mention?
Well, I'm up in Liverpool for the weekend with the Ghost Club.
Excellent.
Busy, along with Anne Winsper. We're hosting a Ghost Club weekend in Liverpool. Mm. And then I'm still busy preparing for the US in the fall, the SPR conference, and other stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Spirit Quest or something I've got to go over for.
Yep, so you'll be over here in September, which I'm extremely excited about. So I'll be good
I'm
to see
you. Because you've done that ghost cruise again in August.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we got to go in the warm weather. We're not going to go when it's cool. And we got sunlight, so.
Yeah, but it was better in the dark.
No, you can't see anything. How the hell are you going to see stuff you're in a cruise?
It worked the last time I was the first time I was there. We did a really neat cruise. It was like being
first
on
time.
The, yeah, it was like being on the Orca on the shoot of Jaws.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So anyway, so we actually did a ghost hunt cruise, which was interesting because then we did a bunch of experiments. We went to, you know, we anchored off certain haunted locations, reportedly haunted locations, and did, you know, different things. It was fun. It was a lot of fun, actually.
I've already decided what next week's word of the week is going to be.
Oh, good for you.
Haunted.
Yeah, fun.
The most overused but incorrectly used word of the week.
Yeah. All right, so cheerio.
Cheerio. Good night, God bless, etc. We've gone now. They'll never hear this.
Yeah. Never hear it. We're done.
Yeah, we're done.
From ghoulies to ghosties, long-leggedy beasties, and things that go bump in the night. Deliver us, good Lord.